Two, one.
Welcome everybody to the Chinchilla Pickin' Podcast. It is February 18th, 2024. As always, we hope to be entertaining, educational, and uplifting because we want everyone to make money. My name is David Underwood, and I am joined by the one and only Brandon Beaver. Brandon, how are you today, man?
Good. How about you?
Doing well. I mean, there was a lot of news, a lot of things that happened. There's a lot we could talk about. If this was a news show, I mean, we have tons of stories from this past week, but as far as it actually affecting stocks or investments, not too much there.
I mean, we do a lot of news on here now, and a lot of that is because, other than Pepsi, over the past couple of months, there just hasn't been anything that's jumped out to me as a buy. And looking at right now, the sectors that I would be bullish on would be the IT security sector. But other people have already caught on to that anyways. I mean, Palo Alto's networks, they've skyrocketed in the past 52 weeks. So I kind of think I missed that train. You know what I mean?
I mean, if it's a long-term investment and you believe in the company, then no, you haven't.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, you say that. So let's go back. Let's go back in the day here. If you were on our Facebook group before we started Chinchilla Pickin', this is like this is like what, 2017, I think, 2016, somewhere around there. A long, man, we've been at this a while, but I think it was 2017. And I was posting on there, hey, NVIDIA looks like it's going to have a good run up. Here's why. NVIDIA would run up. People would make money. And people commented, yeah, I missed the boat on NVIDIA. So imagine if you felt that way. And I'm just using an example. I know we're going to both talk about it here in the show. But imagine if you felt that way about that. But then you missed out on all the other run up. So, you know, Palo Alto may still have more to go. You don't know.
Well, it might be, but it would be a trade for me as far as the IT security sector goes for the next year.
Yeah, what about CrowdStrike? I mean, if you're talking IT security, that's one that always comes straight to my mind here.
I mean, that's true too, and that's been on my list for a while as well.
Okay. All right. I think if we're going to go anywhere in the IT service, and I like Microsoft. Personally, they do a lot of the cloud business. They have continued growth, just a monster company. I know I've on the show said I would love to buy them many times. I don't have the spare capital. I have a few handful of shares, but I don't have the spare capital to really invest.
Okay, so yeah, and the same thing for me, Microsoft, and I'm already in Google. So that would be another one as well.
Okay. Yep. No, big week this week. A lot happened. I'm sure we're going to cover it. I know I have a lot of data. I know you have a lot of data to go through in the show, and we'll discuss how to trade it, what to invest with it, and talk about some upcoming earnings this week. But let me get into the rules. Rules. Brandon and I get together 5 to 10 minutes before the show, and we tell each other what we're going to talk about. You hear the live back and forth right here on the show. Brandon, take it away, man.
You know what? I'm going to give you a stock that I think.
Oh.
I've done minimal research on this.
Oh, something he didn't tell me before the show. All right, what you
and
got?
I'm really reaching here. Kongsberg Defense and Aerospace. It's a Norwegian company. It's not available on Robinhood. It's on Schwab if you have Schwab.
So it's a penny stock?
But no, it's not a penny stock. It's
okay.
I really have to pull this up. Here it is. Hold on. It's $62.55 a share.
What's the ticker?
NSKFF. I'm not gonna go too hard on this because, like I said, I've done minimal research on it. PE is not bad. It's at 30.95. They're getting a lot of European government contracts right now, so that's why I'm kind of looking at it. And I am bullish on the defense sector, but I want to stay away from Boeing. This is why I'm reaching. Because a lot of the defense sector stocks here in the United States have, they've got exposure to Boeing. But
well, what about Raytheon?
I mean, that's minimal. But it's still got higher exposure than Lockheed. So I would prefer Lockheed over Raytheon, and Raytheon's had their own problems with engines and stuff that they've been making for, airlines. So Raytheon's got their, I think it's a fan problem with them or something, but Lockheed is still my favorite there domestically, but I would look into that stock that I just mentioned that
Yeah, it's doubled since Ukraine got invaded. And Norway and being right there with Russia, I can see why it's doubled. They are giving a lot of according to what I'm reading here, a lot of the equipment over to Ukraine, and then Norway's replacing that with newer equipment. So this company is actually making some good money right now.
Yeah, I think it's gonna continue. I'm not super excited about it though, just because, like I said, this is just something that popped up on my watch list literally about an hour ago. So,
Hey, sometimes those are good. Sometimes they turn out to be nothing. Sometimes they turn out to be an investment you pour money into.
yeah. All right. So, Dave, you still in the soft landing camp here? I'm curious, and I would think that you are. Am I correct?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything. And that, like I said, I'm watching for different signs, but I have not seen any of those signs or any of those levees break, if you will, yet that I'm looking for.
I'm going to give you some worrying stats here, and then I'm going to end it here with some things that are not so worrying. But if you look at the month of January, the announced job cuts just for January, and this didn't all happen in January. These are all things that are predicted to happen throughout the course of the year. Announced job cuts just in January, 82,000 jobs. Cisco reportedly cut around 84,900 employees globally just as of July last year. And we're not really seeing this tide, at least from the tech sector, of corporate job cuts st stopping anytime soon. Layoffs for the month of January were up 136% year over year. Kind of a worrying way to start the year. However, last week's unemployment claims were lower than expected. And there were some indications in the industrial reduction industrial production report that there's promising UF shifts towards high-tech manufacturing. That's still going strong. There's good output of semiconductors, for instance, that's up 23% year over year, according to Capital Economics. Experts are citing high interest rates and inflation as some of the main drivers for the layoffs. You'd have to actually go back to the financial crisis of January 2020, I'm sorry, of January 2009 to find a higher job cut level as far as layoffs being announced in 1 month. So that's kind of worrying, right? Not all of these jobs have been cut yet, but they've been announced.
So, all right. So, if you want to, I'm looking at that, but then I look at the unemployment rate. It's remaining at 3.7%. The payroll numbers came out for January, 353,000 jobs. So, decent number there. You had a total of 6.1 million people unemployed at this time currently of eligible workers. And the majority, like teenagers, are 10% eligible workers that are unemployed. You could break down these numbers. I don't see anything startling, though.
So yeah, the unemployment report was not too bad, but like I said, a lot of those 82,000 jobs that were announced in January that are going to be cut haven't hit that report yet. Because it hasn't happened yet.
Here's another one. I'll give you here. Great. Now there's one. Now it's working. Here we go. So the number of jobs available in the market. Remember, I was talking about this, and this is a number I watch. It is at 9 million flat. It was down to 8.8 million at one point. So it's gone back up. So the amount of jobs available is staying steady and not decreasing anymore. Which was a sign I was looking for to see if it was continuous downturn, and it hasn't. It stopped, and it's holding steady at around 9 million. So, that's a good sign for the economy.
That is a good sign. Retail sales did fall 0.8% in January from December. The Commerce Department said on Thursday this was actually much worse than the expectations for a 0.3% decline, but I wouldn't say like a lot worse. My notes say much worse, but I wouldn't say much worse. I would just say worse. Also, Thursday, the Federal Reserve data showed January industrial production edging down 0.1%. Expectations were for a 0.2% increase. So missed on those numbers there. But if you look within the retail sales report, spending on food services and drinking places, that was up 0.7%. And 6.3% higher in January than last year. And that's not really something that you would expect if the economy were suddenly in trouble. However, it is something that you might expect if inflation was still high. So we're still in this position economically where we're getting contradictory, you know, numbers left and right here. And that's normal. But I mean, man, if it kind of, I wonder how much of a mask the top seven stocks, and maybe count out Tesla because Tesla hasn't been doing so good the past year. So the top six stocks,
not the past year. Past year, don't say that. Say the past few months they haven't done good, and it was all, and they dropped from 260 down to 179 was the low they hit because of that recall story, which we covered that, and in fact they've bounced back up and they're over 200. So
yeah, but I mean,
I would to characterize Tesla as the past year being bad. No, that's incorrect.
They're down 0.23% for the past 12 months.
0.23%.
That's bad though. That's not. I mean, you're. I mean, how much is the S&P 500?
They were up until those stories came out just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
they were positive.
500 in the same period's up 22.73%. So
so was Tesla until those stories came out just 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Well, here's the thing: if you were to take Meta and Google and Microsoft and Apple out of the S&P 500, we'd be roughly flat or negative. So I wonder how many weaknesses those stocks in the market are covering up. Because it doesn't seem that the market breadth, even for the last 12 months, has been super strong. It's all been concentrated in these top stocks. So
I mean, I would look at the earnings reports and of the other sectors and see what they're saying. Like, are they coming out and saying it's horrible? You know, has Target have a loss? Does Walmart have a loss? You know, are we seeing that? No, they're still profitable.
Walmart's coming out next week. I think Home Depot as well. To me, it seems like we're pointing towards a mild recession. I mean, if you look at Pepsi's earnings, not so good. And if you're trading, and we're kind of for investors, let me talk about long-term investors actually here. If you're looking at your stocks, oftentimes you really don't want to react to the quarterly report. So what, one bad quarter and Pepsi's, you know, with Pepsi out of the past 14 quarters, so there's been 13 quarters that have been really good, and the 14th one's, you know, not so good. You don't sell based on that. And so you don't really make a decision as to where the economy is going to go based on one quarterly report. But there's a smidgen, at least, of evidence that we may be heading towards a mild recession. I don't know if you characterize that as a soft landing. We use the term soft landing so often, but it's very subjective. So what is a soft landing? Is it not a recession at all? Is it a mild recession? Is it anything that's, you know, outside of a severe recession? I don't know. I don't know how you want to characterize it, but I think we're probably going towards a mild recession.
I would characterize soft landing, I think most people would agree with me, as this. It's whenever you have a period of where you've had to raise rates intensively to battle inflation, and you are doing it in such a way so that it does not provoke deflation or a recession. So you don't get any recession. Now, a correction in the market happens every year, sometimes twice a year, sometimes three times a year. That's one thing. We're talking about an actual recession of negative GDP.
I think we're getting towards the point in the year. I think it's time for a correction here. I don't know that we're going to go super deep into a correction, but I think it's time for a correction. But I'm going to go ahead and look at some earnings here with Uber. This was a good report. So Uber Technologies posting its first full year profit as a public company. They project continued growth in the first quarter of 2024. They had a profit of $1.43 billion in the final 3 months of 2023, $1 billion of which is from equity investments. $430 million of it comes from operations. But that's a big deal because this is only the second time that they've reported a yearly profit. And the first time they reported a yearly profit was prior to going public. And that yearly profit was mostly from investments. They had no operating income whatsoever at the time. No positive operating revenue. I think it was in 2016. So positive operating profit here. $430 million. That's still a pretty good, you know, hill for them to climb here. The CEO said, looking back, 2023 was an inflection point for Uber, proving that we can continue to generate strong, profitable growth at scale. And that was on the conference call, the earnings call afterwards. Uber is now expected to outline long-term financial targets at its Investors Day, which will happen next week. Total value of transactions on its app grew 22% to $37.58 billion. Uber's revenue, or its cut from those transactions, increased 15% to $9.93 billion. They expect total value of transactions on its app to come between $37 billion and $38.5 billion for the first 3 months of 2024. That's in line with expectations, according to FactSet. In the last 3 months of 2023, the company's mobility grew at 34%. Its delivery revenue expanded 6%, while its revenue from freight climbed 17%. You know what? If you bought this at the IPO at around 40, I think it was somewhere between $40 and $42 a share, you're doing pretty well now. I mean, it's in the 70s, but it took a lot of patience to get here for sure.
I like the freight business for Uber. I think that's a good future for them. I think that's where they should focus.
Short term, not so much. Short term, it's been pretty bad. But yeah, I agree long term on this.
Yeah, I think that's where they need to focus some of their investments. But no, I don't see. Look, man, like you pointed out, if you're it's like the Instacart thing, right? So if you're making your money, your profit is based off of your investments and not your actual business, then your business is not worth investing in. If I want to invest in a company that makes money off investments, I'm going to invest with Goldman Sachs. Well, I'm not going to invest with Uber.
Like I said, the investment increase, the time that they had the full year profit from only investments, that was 2016. This year, they had investments represent $1 billion out of the $1.43 billion profit that they had. $430 million of that was from operating profits, which they didn't have before.
Okay, so they are making some profits off the business. All right, absolutely, good.
And it's growing.
Good. Yeah, because that would be my main concern. Because a company like Instacart, I brought that up as an example, is, you know, they're not profitable as a company. They make their money off of ads. But if I want to add business, I'll invest in Google.
I mean, that's true.
Or Facebook, Meta.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. But I still like Uber. I like Uber if you bought it at the IPO, which I actually told one of our listeners to, I think it was back in 2018. It IPO'd somewhere in the low $40 range. It popped up and then it came back down. And I said, hey, you might not get another shot at getting this at the IPO. Turns out I was wrong. You got a second and third shot, especially because of COVID on it. But this particular listener is a good investor. He had the patience and the awareness to wait through it. And, you know, it's patience pays in the market. And so he's making money on it now.
Right. Every now and then we got to applaud ourselves and talk to the new listeners and tell them what's going on. Some of the listeners, if you're new to our show, they'll reach out to us individually, DM us, ask us questions. And I personally know a handful of them that are in better positions now than they were, you know, than they ever thought they could be. They're sitting on lots of investments and watching it grow, and you know, they get excited over earnings reports now, and they realize that these are good opportunities to, as a, I say, a second stream of retirement funds. You have your 401k or your pension or what have you, and then you also have your personal stock investments. So,
yeah, with a savings account to you know, to cushion you. That way, you never have to dive into those stocks when you don't want to.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, so you're talking about emergency account.
Emergency,
are we getting all Dave Ramsey here? Because I like that aspect of Dave Ramsey is having the 3 to 6 months, income on hand in an account ready to go. But you know, there's lots of good accounts you can set that in where you can access it quickly too, like Robinhood. You get 5% interest rather than what a usual bank would give you.
But still, you're still playing games with it. Do you want to have to, if you're in a situation and we do go into a recession, right? A lot of people lose their jobs in recessions. That's why it's a recession. So you lose your job at the worst part, you know, the worst time to possibly lose it. And now you don't have savings. You got your stocks though. That's great. But now you're down 30% for the year. But if you've got a savings account to kind of, you know, cushion yourself between your stocks and investment and your regular account, then you don't have to worry about selling stocks at the wrong time. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. That's a good example. I like that.
Yeah. So we called for about 3 or 4 months ago, probably maybe even a year ago. I've been talking about streaming consolidation. We talked last year or last episode. We don't necessarily want a cartel in streaming, so to speak, but so many streaming platforms and companies now that people just can't keep track of. You can't possibly have all of these streaming companies. It's too saturated. So now we're starting to see consolidation. I mean, last week we talked about Disney going direct to consumer with ESPN, but doing it as a partnership with TNT or Warner Brothers Discovery. But TNT Sports is what that's going to be. And then ESPN. And then there's a third one that I can't even think of who it is right now. But
Fox Sports.
Yeah, Fox Sports. That's what it is. So it's ESPN, Fox Corp, and Warner Brothers going in and kind of consolidating to join forces to create a sports streaming joint venture here. Now we've got more news. This is from the Wall Street Journal. From the Wall Street Journal, Paramount Global is holding talks with Comcast about joining forces and kind of combining Paramount Plus and Peacock. We don't necessarily know the details on this, but looking at Paramount, they've got the Star Trek programming, originals such as 1883, simulcasts of CBS football games. Peacock's got live soccer, football, originals like Poker Face, WWE Network, and a deep library with shows like The Office. But, you know, if you're an Office fan, are you going to get Peacock Plus, you know, only for The Office? Maybe, because it's only $5.99 and it's one of the lower, you know, tiered offerings in this industry. But I think this is what people are looking at. First of all, these companies are losing a lot of money on streaming. And if they can kind of share those losses and kind of build with each other, and you know, then they can maybe be competitive with Netflix, and then maybe they can turn profit in streaming. And so Paramount and its parent company, they're looking at National Amusements as the parent company, by the way. They're exploring a range of potential strategic options, according to the Wall Street Journal. National Amusements has had talks with a company called Skydance Media. Chief executive David Ellison says that he might sell National Amusements. That would include their controlling stake in Paramount to a group of investors that he is leading, and merge Paramount movie and TV studio into Skydance. That's a possibility here. Paramount CEO Bob Bakish is having conversations with Warner Brothers Discovery about a possible merger there as well. So lots of interesting things happening here in the streaming universe. I, as an investor, I am sitting this out and I am waiting for the smoke to clear.
Paramount is a good investment if you ask me, but I'm not going to put any money in it myself. Wouldn't it be nice if, you know, they just put all these streaming services together in one big huge bundle and just sold that?
Yeah, didn't that used to be called Netflix? Wasn't that what that was? Or Hulu?
No, no. I think it was called cable. And people used to just pay for one thing and get it.
I was researching the history of all this television stuff. And you know, in the 1970s, the biggest seller for cable television and people to pay into cable was that there was no commercials.
See?
There's no
There you
commercials
go.
On cable, so everybody bought cable. And they're like, oh, we don't have to watch commercials and we're getting all these new movies, because they would put movies that were coming out on television or on the big screen. Those movies were going to cable at the time. Awesome.
Yep.
So people were like, oh, great, I'm saving money. And then all of a sudden they pulled the bait and switch and they're like, oh, nope, you got commercials again. And the movies are going straight to the movie theaters again. And now we're experiencing the same thing in streaming, is what I'm saying here. Because at the very beginning, when you paid for Hulu and Netflix, there were no commercials.
You could still get no commercials. You just got to pay a higher fee.
Yeah, it's different, right? So here's my surprise. It's not a surprise to me, because I knew that Berkshire Hathaway, being a long-term owner of Berkshire Hathaway, I knew that they owned Paramount.
So they agree with me that that's the only good investment. Thank you.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, listen, the wide moat that Warren Buffett also often looks for is just not there. So I'm surprised still to this day that they ever had a stake in it. But they sold one third of the stake last year. So.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not investing in media companies. That's not my forte. That's not what I look into. In fact, I've learned more about media companies from you, Brandon, than I personally knew. I've not one I invest in. I know in this year there's going to be a lot of ad revenue from the political ads run-ins. I think it's going to be a great year for them. But other than that, I mean, Facebook, Google's where I would go.
Well, so here's the thing. I do own Disney, so I can't say that I won't buy a media company, because I do own it, but I owned it since the early $90 a share mark.
You own Facebook too. You own Meta.
4 or 5 months ago. Meta's not streaming, though, are they?
No, it's not. No.
So I own Meta, and it is a media company. And Netflix, we did call a buy when Netflix was down like a year and a half ago. And if you would have bought it, and I didn't, unfortunately, I wish I would have, but if you would have bought it back then, you would have done really, really well. So, and Netflix is another one too, that I would say, hey, if this stock comes down in price and Netflix, that's the thing I would be looking at. Disney, again, if you get another shot at it in the early $90 or range, a lower $90 range, Disney, I would look at also because of Hulu, as streaming, not the only reason why I would buy it, but I'm just saying
I would look at the reason why it's in that range. What drove it down?
Parks revenue was awful. I mean, we had a whole show on this. Were you not paying attention?
Were you talking? I don't even know. Were you talking? All right.
Gaming losses were a big part of that.
Gotcha. Cool. All right, man. What else you got?
That's everything. That is all for me.
All right. And now my computer wants to freeze up here. All right. So talking about some of our quote unquote wins or things we've gotten right, because I do like to mention this, to point out to listeners, especially if you're new. So about 6 weeks ago, I mentioned on the show, we're talking about NVIDIA had this big run up, and it was like, where else can you invest? And NVIDIA's already up. If you're not in it, have you missed the boat? Yada, yada, yada. We're going down that road. And I mentioned a company called Super Micro Computers. And I mentioned that this company would be one that you could put your money in. Unfortunately, I'm too much invested right now that I don't have the amount of money to invest in it and add it to part of my investments at that time. And I still don't have the room for it in my portfolio. But however, I will mention, since I made that call on the show, you could go back and listen to it. Since I made that call on the show about it, it has gone up from around $300 share to, it went up above $1,000 share. Now it's come back down, which is typically what you see when the company gaps up that much that quickly. You typically see a pullback from profit taken, and naturally so. You know, that's what happens. Profit taking is completely natural. So if a company, all of a sudden, like portfolio managers and investment banks, they don't like a certain company to make up a large percentage of their holdings, because then you have a lot of risk, because what if that company goes under, right? So if a company's stock increases that much that quickly, they like to trim it a little bit to make sure that they're not making up too much percentage of their portfolio. So profit taking is not always bad. It's a good thing. You know, and as long as it's not going all the way back down to where it was, that means that they're not selling everything. They're just trimming the fat off of it so that they can take some profits and reinvest it elsewhere. But Super Micro Computers was a call, and it was as an alternative to NVIDIA. And that's what I was pitching it as. And like, it was something else that you could put your money in. It also was in the same type of field. And I was really cracking a joke about the name. I said, hey, it's called Super Micro Computers. Can't be that bad, right? And we got a good chuckle out of it. You should sometime read about how they came up with the name. Maybe I'll cover them in depth here on a next podcast or something. But in the meantime, they are AI related, and that's why they're moving up. You know, they're related with the NVIDIA thing, and that's why I mentioned it as a something to buy after, if you feel like you missed the boat on NVIDIA. Kind of see that's how it fits in, you know. In fact, it actually goes into this article I was going to bring up, so let me get into the article, because they kind of go hand in hand. Wall Street week ahead, high flying NVIDIA's earnings could test U.S. stock market's AI dreams. This was in Reuters, came out this morning, 9 a.m. That's the headlines by David Randall and Saqib Iqbal Ahmed. So what it's talking about, NVIDIA's earnings, which they're going to report this week, and they're going to be coming out on the 20th, I believe, or 21st of this week. What they're looking for. So excitement over the business potential of AI has boosted NVIDIA shares by more than 46% since January 1st. That's a $570 billion increase in market capitalization since then. It's more than tripled the market value of Intel. And it's just continuing to grow. You know, we continue going there and what have you. But what you were talking about as far as this impact on the S&P 500, the chip makers' gains have accounted for more than a quarter of the S&P's 500 this year, the increase this year. So a quarter of it comes from NVIDIA alone. That's wow. That's a good or bad thing. So other AI-focused stocks have surged this year, including Super Micro Computer, which is up 182% year to date, and Arm Holdings, which is up 71% year to date. So on February 21st, we're going to be looking at NVIDIA. They're expecting an earnings of $4.56 a share. That's a rising quarterly revenue to $20.37 billion, up from $6 billion a year ago. That's a big increase. And what this article, take time, if you have a few minutes sometime in your day, read this article. But if you have a few time, they go in to say that if NVIDIA just meets and doesn't beat this, that you may see a drop. You may see a 10% drop. And then if NVIDIA completely misses the earnings, you could see more than a 10% drop in the market. In the sector,
so it's going to be a huge, huge market mover. The crazy thing about this is, though, that the expectations have been sky high for every quarter over the past year and a half, 2 years, and they've beat it every single time.
I know, but eventually, you got to get to a point where you just don't, like Apple did finally, right?
Right.
Apple finally got to a point where they just didn't beat earnings. So eventually, all companies get to a point where they just meet. Or they are no longer blown out of the water, right? So is it that time for NVIDIA, or are they still pulling in the cash hand over fist here? It's a lot. There's a lot of option plays this week based off of this. A lot of options in the option market. So we have to see. I'm kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. It could be a big sell-off overall of NVIDIA, because then Super Micro is going to fall. Then basically all the big the big names are going to start going down. Meta will drop, Google will drop. And I think it'd be a good opportunity to buy a company like a Google that aren't related to NVIDIA in the chip sector, but they're just being pulled down by NVIDIA going down. So if NVIDIA goes down, there's buying opportunities is how I look at it.
We already know that Meta is reported to be shelling out $10 billion or possibly even more for 350,000 H100 GPUs from NVIDIA. So a lot of companies there spending a lot of money on NVIDIA stuff. We don't know where this AI thing's going to wind up. We really don't. It's all speculative at this point, but I think that there's some for sure. I think, you know, the IT security sector that we mentioned before, that's going to be it's going to be a huge boom for them. We know that.
Well, I mean, they've already been growing at a fantastic rate, but then because of companies wanting to rebalance their budgets, they stopped doing yearly renewals and they've gone to quarterly renewals with these with companies such as CrowdStrike and so forth. So there's been a rebalancing, if you will, of the revenues in these cybersecurities. And then Walmart, I covered on the show, they just built their own cybersecurity division.
Yeah, and where they're going with this is using the artificial intelligence to predict attacks before they happen. So
right,
that's.
But then now you get into what is it the war games from the mid 80s. You know, you predict an attack, and so you attack because computers are running it all, and so the computers are like, well, I see this happening, so I'm just going to go ahead and shoot a nuke over at Russia, and then nuclear war.
Hopefully not. But we do know that that infrastructure, cybersecurity infrastructure attacks from China, at least to the United States, are up like twofold just, I think, in the past year. So that's the way that this is moving. That's one way that I'm looking at a artificial intelligence. We have no idea where the metaverse is going. We have no idea where virtual reality is going. And that's all speculative at this point.
So, yeah, I was going to mention that. I've seen all these videos on social media of people walking around their headsets, and it's just a joke. They're not doing anything. They're just putting their fingers in the air. They're doing it because you have someone there recording them. Come on now. It's set up. It's set up to look a certain way. They're not doing anything on those screens. They're sitting there just, you know, moving their finger in air. Now, can you walk with those things? Yes, you can walk and do things with those things, but the power battery is not going to last forever. They're going to last at most 2 hours, maybe three if you have a power battery backup, but that's it. And then you got to run it off of your hotspot on your phone, because otherwise you have to hook it up, you know, Wi-Fi. You know, I mean, they're not walking around the streets doing stuff. That's for show, people. That's for show. And that's probably Apple paying them because they're influencers saying, hey, we'll give you a free headset, walk around the neighborhood wearing it every so often. Because I said Apple's marketing team is amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've got that incredible, revolutionary, new, innovative, brand new headset that nobody's ever seen the likes of before, ever.
That's just so really crap. You know, I saw someone on the stock chatter boards this past week. You know what they said? They said, I get that, Meta and everywhere, HTC and all these other companies have had headsets out that do all the same thing. But it sounds like their marketing teams just suck. I was like, yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I mean, look, Meta had that entire conference that CNBC covered just 2 years ago talking about the Meta Quest and the metaverse and everything. It was huge news. So I don't know. They haven't been very consistent with the Quest Pro, but the Quest is better at gaming, and maybe the Apple Vision Pro. I don't know. I probably will never try it because it's like $3,500. But that might be better for productivity and work. I don't know.
It's not. You could do the same thing with the Quest. You could do the same thing with the HTC Vive. You could do the same thing. It's not better. It looks cool. That's it.
Does it, though? I don't know that it does.
People are saying it does. Wow. It's just a way of flexing your cash and flexing who you are. But, I mean, you're just going to end up, you walk around the street with that, you're going to end up getting robbed.
Yeah.
People are going to grab it off your head, man.
Right. You can't walk down New York City with those on. That doesn't.
I wasn't going to pick on any one individual city, but I'm just like, you know, yeah, you're going to, yeah, I would never
Fine,
do
let's
that.
pick on a city, Chicago. You can't walk down Chicago with a Vision Pro on.
I wouldn't do it. Let's go. Let's circle back to stock and investment news here. So yeah, that was the article I had on NVIDIA. We're looking forward to what they have coming up this week. There's one other article I want to get to, Brandon, and this had kind of what you were talking about as well. And this is why I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we had a lot of stats and figures to cover in the show, but I want to cover this because there's a lot of stat, there's a lot of meat in this article. And if you get a chance, read it, definitely this one. The headline is on CNBC.com, and the headline reads, "Companies, profitable or not, make 2024 the year of cost cuts." This was published this morning at 7 a.m., written by Melissa Repko and Leslie Joseph. So it goes into, it starts off by building the case that a lot of companies have announced layoffs. Mattel, PayPal, Cisco, Nike, Estee Lauder, Levi Strauss, that have announced layoffs. Macy's have announced layoffs. They're going to close five of their the Macy's stores. JetBlue, Spirit Airlines have announced staff buyouts. United Airlines cut first-class meals in some of their shorter flights. So first-class passengers now get to choose from a high-end snack basket is what they're calling it. UPS made big news by cutting 10,000 jobs. And that was big because they just signed that labor contract and they immediately go out and cut 10,000 jobs. Very interesting there. Some of the exceptions, though, it goes into this. An exception to the cost cutting is Walmart. Last month, they're going to build or convert more than 150 stores over the next 5 years, along with more than $9 billion investment to modernize many of its current stores. So when everybody else is out there cutting costs, trying to trim stores, trim headcount, Walmart's out here investing money and trying to grow.
Yeah, so they cut, I think, about 700 stores last year, but they're more the smaller stores. Than anything, and they're just trying to build a base for growth in the future, and they've got a plan to expand in the coming year or two. So,
right,
Dave, I just came up with a great idea to make us millions of dollars for the app.
Well, hold on, we'll get there in a second. There's also companies, banks, Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs, they've already cut this year, but banks cut every January, and this is what some people don't realize is, yes, when you get out of college, if you got your doctorates in economics or masters in economics, you could go work at Goldman Sachs or somewhere else and an investment bank. But if you're one of the lower performing, you're going to be cut come January. And they do these cuts every year, and they cut their lower performing workers. And it's every January. And so if you make it through February, you're considered safe for the rest of the year until they do it again come next January. But banks cut every single January.
Yeah. Doing a remodel too. Have you ever walked into a PNC before? I mean, they're some of the coolest, most comfortable feeling banks, and they're doing a refresh and remodel over most of their branches and opening up new branches in the next year too. So that'll be something interesting to see. Because I think you walk into PNC and you kind of have this comfortable feeling if you're a business if you're there with a business account, and it kind of makes you want to do business with PNC because of how good it feels to be in there.
Right. Right. And so, I mean, that's a good feeling. That's a good feeling. Let me get back to these job cuts and then we'll go more about PNC. All right. So in January, U.S. companies announced, 82,000 job cuts. That's more than double than the number in December, but it's still down 20% from a year ago when they were a lot of companies were doing major job cuts. Meta was one of them. Meta had the year of what do you call it? The year of efficiency. That was what he was calling a year of efficiency. And so recent weeks, Amazon, Alphabet, Microsoft, Cisco, among others, have announced staff reductions. It goes into UPS cutting their 12,000, saving the company $1 billion. Warner Brothers has slashed content spending and headcount, part of $4 billion in total cost savings from the merger of Discovery and Warner Media. Disney initially promised $5.5 billion in cost reductions in 2023. That got 7,000 layoffs, but the company has since increased its savings promise to $7.5 billion. So a lot of cost cutting in Disney. Last week, Paramount Global announced hundreds of layoffs in an effort as an to operate as a leaner company as well. So everybody's doing cost cutting across the board. JetBlue's is actually putting off buying new planes for a little bit that they had already ordered, and so they canceled the orders. Delta Airlines, which is actually profitable, but they did say they're going to cut some of their office jobs. So even the profitable companies are making cuts to stay profitable. It goes into the car companies. I mean, this article covered just about every sector, Brandon. It's a good article. If you get a chance, read it. But what it goes to in kind of the past 4 or 5 years here, the history of during the pandemic, a lot of companies cut, took an opportunity to go trim down their workforce very little. But then everybody came out of the pandemic, wanted to go out everywhere to spend money. So then they couldn't hire fast enough. And they're saying it's a rebalancing period right now where we're trying to find the right balance of workers for the companies to actually work with. So at the end of this article here at the very end where I'm at now reading, it says most major retailers include Walmart, Target, and Home Depot report earnings in the coming weeks. And we're expected to get a better idea of how it's going to look at going at that point in time. Credit ratings agency Fitch says it doesn't expect the U.S. economy to tip into recession, but it does anticipate a continued pullback in discretionary spending. So that's what I'm going to be looking for on the earnings calls of these retail companies in the next couple of weeks. Brandon, thoughts?
So other than them being in different sectors and industries, there's one underlying theme other than Walmart, which has a wide economic moat. But going into this inflationary thing, me and you, Dave, we called the inflation problem. Yes. We knew this was going to happen before it even hit the 7%, before it even, before it was even a problem. We knew it was going to be a problem. And what did we say? We said, go into companies that have a wide economic moat that are able to increase their prices. 80% of the companies that you just listed do not have that. They're in saturated industries. They're in streaming. They're JetBlue Airways, which is in the discount airlines market, which is highly competitive. All of those companies, they cannot raise their prices and gain market share. It's not going to happen. So what do they have to do? They have to cut jobs. They have to cut jobs. They have to cut costs on the other end of it to try to either become profitable or stay profitable. That's what they have to do. You want to be in companies in these situations that have the ability to raise prices rather than kill jobs.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, or in the case in the video, you have a product that everybody wants, so you could charge whatever you want to charge for it.
Right. And Walmart's a different story because Walmart's looking for future growth. I think Meta, Apple, and some of these tech companies that have cut jobs, Cisco's kind of in the same position right now, cutting jobs and kind of reorganizing for future growth, which is something that technology companies have to continuously do because they have to stay on top of things. As technology is changing, every single day it changes, let alone every year, every 2 years, where they have to reorganize and aim for the next thing, or reorganize and look in growth and artificial intelligence or wherever the next boom is going to come from. But as far as the streaming and the JetBlues and such, there's nowhere for them to go other than cutting costs in order to stay profitable, because if they raise their prices, they're going to lose market share to everybody else.
Exactly. I like your thought process, man.
Can I tell you my idea for that?
Go ahead, because I'm done. So go ahead. We're going to get into final thoughts here. So actually, your final thought, Brandon. Okay. Go ahead.
My final thought, this, Dave, this will make us millions of dollars. Listeners, do not.
Let's tell everybody who's listening now about this. But go ahead.
All right. So if you're wearing that Vision Pro, if you're gutsy enough to walk through Chicago wearing that Vision Pro, an app that will tell you how far away the gunshots are.
Edit.
You got to know if you're going to run or not.
Edit. No. Wow. Final thought for investment in stocks.
Actually, there was an app on the App Store called ShotSpotter that Chicago just made illegal. So
there really was an app.
I'm talking about Chicago now. Yeah. Okay. Final thought, NVIDIA is going to be an interesting earnings report. Back in 2018, NVIDIA had a very forgettable year, or what one that they would like to forget. The Trump administration launched the trade war with China. A lot of things were happening in the tech sector that were not very good for NVIDIA. It was down 52% at the end of 2018. If you would have bought, if you would have spent $1,000 on, well, that's not, so $3,300, because you would have bought 100 shares at what would have roughly been a price of $33 a share, adjusting for splits. Your stake in this company right now would be $726,700, up 2,100%. From $3,300.
I wish I would have just held it then.
Yeah, it would have been a nice hold, right? And I wish I would have too.
I didn't have the diamond hands back then that I do now.
But patience pays.
It does. I mean, I traded it and made money each time, but yeah.
Let's give credit where credit's due. This is the one of the calls that Jim Cramer has made correct pretty consistently throughout his career for the last, like, I don't know what.
Yeah, him and I have agreed on NVIDIA over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also called Supermicrocomputer, just by the way.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Okay. So he gets some right. We'll give it to him.
All right. My final thought is look for opportunities this week if NVIDIA misses. If NVIDIA beats, I mean, just keep holding your holds because they're going to go higher. It will push the market up depending on how much they beat. If they just meet, you're going to see a flat day is what I'm thinking. I don't know. We were having the same discussion, Brandon, 1 year ago at this time on this podcast about I'm looking to see what NVIDIA says in their earnings. That's the same discussion a year ago. Here we are a year later, still having the same discussion. NVIDIA is the topic. Their earnings are going to move the market here again 1 year later. So we'll see. We'll see what they come out with, see what they post. I still think Tesla is going to move higher from where it's at now. I think you can make a good 10% return on your money if you invest in Tesla right now.
Well, I mean, look, the EVs are down in demand right now, but I think it's mostly because of higher interest rates. So we get those interest rates over the long term back under control and back. But, you know, I think the EVs and stuff, they'll go back up in popularity again.
I don't think EVs have, I mean, the interest rates have too much to do with it. I think this is more of the headlines, the recalls and all that. But yeah, the EV sales declined in China because of the Chinese EV company that is subsidized by the government there, which Tesla's having a hard time competing with. But they are still profitable and they're selling the cars at a profit. So they just got to get those numbers higher. Cool.
Gotcha.
All right. Well, I hope thank everybody for listening. Please tell your friends and families, hit the subscribe button. We appreciate it. As always, we hope we have been entertaining, educational, and uplifting because we want everyone to make money. Have a good night.
Have a good night.